Welcome to University Showcase. I'm Megan Kamrick, news director at KUNM. On September 27th, 2025, a large-scale musical composition unfurled over the course of a day across Albuquerque. It consisted of 20 overlapping movements composed by Pulitzer Prize-winning composer and University of New Mexico alum Raven Chacon. Chacon is also the recipient of a MacArthur Genius Grant, but he grew up in Albuquerque, and he started making music as a teenager, playing all over the city in unlikely places, like rooftops and the West Mesa. On this episode, Chacon talks about the creation of Tiwe, Dawn to Dusk, and we hear segments of the musical tapestry that covered the city, from Sandia Crust to the Rio Grande to the petroglyphs and volcanoes on the west side. It was an invitation from the Tamarind Institute at UNM that sparked the creation of Tiwe, which is the Tiwa word for the valley between Sandia and Isleta Pueblos. Chacon was invited to make a lithograph at Tamarind. He started studying maps at the MAGIC, that's the Maps and Geographic Information Center at UNM.
And I just started sketching these different representations of Albuquerque. And at the same time, kind of inserting these notations and prompts as graphics. And so a lot of the scores I've been making in my career are these graphic notation, kind of open invitation music scores that suggest extra musical things. They might tell you what notes to play or what instruments are to be sounded, but they also tell you how to move, how long something might last. They give a lot of options. And so this project of making a print, the print was just the excuse to make the music, as a score always is. I told the Tamarind, I said, you know, we're going to have to do this sometime. And they connected me to people at the city, and we got the conversation going about how to pull this off in a single day.
How did you choose the specific sites where the movements would be?
Thinking about this city that I've spent most of my life in, thinking about some of these places where I've made music, thinking about some of the strong history here in Albuquerque, thinking about deep time, the volcanoes and the rocks from those volcanoes, creating the black rock that's along the West Mesa. The ancestors made drawings on top of those. And on the other side of the city, we have the mountains and, you know, all the buildings that have come up between those two massive structures. And just kind of placing events all over the city. There's places of significance like 4-H Park, which is a burial site for the former Indian school there. There's the river itself, which we all rely upon. There's odd places like the Glass Beach, Glass Graveyard along the river, the Atomic Museum, and Route 66. Just placing musicians all along these sites and having it become a sequence of music that in itself becomes this musical composition. It was important for me, too, that everything was outdoors, that it was accessible to the public. There would be a lot of people who would be aware of what we were doing that day, but I was also really interested in just your random person passing by and seeing something surreal happening out on the streets or out in the desert and wondering what it is and maybe following along and watching as well.
I tried to hit every performance I could. That was physically impossible, but I tried my best. And I came away with an even more expansive view of Albuquerque than I had before. How did you hope people would experience the performance?
My hope was that people would go to places they'd never been and looked to places they had not looked to before. You know, looking up to the sky, we had performers on rooftops downtown, you know, hiking up to the Black Volcano on the West Mesa. It's something that not many people have done who have lived here for a very long time or gone to appreciate the petroglyphs on the west side of town or even just to walk through the bosque. And so that was important for me, that people just get outside and walk and follow each other. And in a way, it became a kind of treasure hunt of trying to find where the performance was going to happen. You would just come upon what you could, and I think in some ways that also told its own story.
That's interesting. Say more about that.
Well, there wasn't necessarily a narrative across all 20 movements. You know, I think what people have shared with me is that they saw people at each of these movements. So even if they didn't know them, there became this kind of traveling group that would be noticing, hey, I saw that person at the previous one. And everybody's driving around and just kind of playing across the city in their own way. It's almost like children, you know, running around a playground and bumping into each other, but in the case of the entire city. The hope was that you kind of had this continuous song throughout the entire day. And if there was any kind of thread that carried the entire piece, it was that you were still involved in the music, even though you were in the spaces in between when those occurred.
You began with a trumpeter on Sandia Peak. I talked to your mother during the day, and she said this was a prayer. Can you say more?
Yes, that movement, it was performed by a Diné composer and trumpet player, Dwayne Hosky. And I wrote this piece for him. I wanted to think about the sun coming up and the ways that we acknowledge every day as being a special gift to us people. He is supposed to perform that for 5 repeats. And the score says that the very first part of that is to be performed silently. So performing the melody in his head and then repeating it 4 more times. And what happens at the end of the day, movement 19, that movement is called reverse prayer. So he is performing the same melody, but in reverse as the sun sets. Both of this taking place from Sandia Crest.
And then you had a piece with a trombonist aloft in a hot air balloon.
That movement is called The Teaching of the Wind, and that was supported generously by Jonathan Wolfe and the Fractal Foundation.
Flew the balloon, yeah.
Who flew the balloon, and, you know, it's something to be said about that. I mean, this whole project was a gathering of some of the most adventurous people I know in this town just saying, hey, you got a crazy idea? Let's do it. It couldn't have been done without those folks who live here who think like that. He went up in the balloon with a UNM trombone graduate student named Frida Cano. And the prompt for that piece is to play from one of 2 sets of melodies inspired by songs at both Sandia Pueblo and Isleta Pueblo. And if the balloon is flying north and south, they play from one set of pitches. And if they're going east and west, they play from another set of pitches. Now, how fast or, you know, what rhythm they play is determined by what is happening on the ground. And so if they're witnessing a lot of traffic on 4th Street, maybe they play that at a faster rate. Or maybe they see people hiking on the Bosque Trail very slowly, and that becomes less density of notes. And so it's a way to kind of be at the whim of nature, of the wind, but at the same time have this vantage point from above and being able to witness the speed of our city.
You mentioned nature. I was going to say I was there and it was very touch and go, whether the balloon would go up. How did that feel?
I'd been planning this piece for a year, and the question always came up, what do we do if there's a rain day? And everybody from the city and myself and my crew, you know, we we all said, you know, with a chuckle, it's not going to rain, you know, it never rains. And of course, that day it rains. Part of the joke there is, yeah, it might rain, but only for a few minutes. And that's kind of what happened that day. I mean, it was, in a way, a very surreal day because it wasn't your average weather. It kind of equalized time, I think, for myself. I think the day went really quick because we couldn't see the sun. And I'm not sure what that does for music, but it's something I'm always interested in, is music's ability to transcend time or make time more fluid than it is or than we perceive it to be. Another thing that happened that morning, because it was raining, was as Dwayne was playing that prayer on the mountain peak, right when he ended, there was a rainbow going straight up into the sky, which a lot of people thought was somehow planned.
You are a powerful composer.
I wish I could take credit for that, but I have faith that things happen, and when we're attuned to them, we get to see them. And I think music helps us do that or have those experiences. And so for us to be able to have that shared experience across the entire day, I think that kind of attunement becomes more amplified when we're with a group of people.
The movement on the Rio Grande had a cellist playing and lamenting another cello floating by. Was that always the plan, or had you planned to have people on the river playing?
Yeah. When I first thought of that movement, the idea was to have a cello floating down the river and another cellist in a raft that would follow that cello and play to it. Of course, this is another situation of where we live, is we're unsure if there's going to be water or enough water in the Rio Grande. And so it was too much of a daredevil feat to try to anticipate whether there would be water or not.
And there wasn't.
And there was not enough to put a musician in a raft. So the idea then became that this cellist would wait on the banks as the cello went by and then would try to follow it. So continue on further down the river and maybe to Paseo Bridge or I-40 Bridge and wait for it to come and keep playing to it. This happened in the North Valley, and as the cello floated south, we had two musicians on horseback coming up the river trail. This was a movement called the Greeters, in which these singers would sing to anybody they encountered on the Bosque Trail as that person maybe jogged by them or continued on their walk. The singers would slowly fade out the songs that they were singing. And the songs that they were singing were all in Spanish. They were all songs of greeting, but also songs of talking about traveling or even more darker colonial history of talking about the conquest of New Mexico. That was one movement I didn't make it to. I couldn't track down the horses fast enough. I should have put a GPS on them or something.
You had mentioned the separated cannon playing in 4-H Park. They're on a very significant site. As you mentioned, there are graves, a former Indian school there.
Yeah, this was a place that I wanted to reference to talk about the history of residential schools here in our city. It was a melody I had used in a previous opera called Sweetland that is about the colonial history of the United States and the separation of children by the state and by the church. There are four members of Chatter who are positioned at different parts of the park, and ideally they would be playing in coordination, either playing the melody together or playing them maybe separated by a beat or a measure so that it becomes this very coordinated and tight canon. But because they're spread out so far, the only prompt was just begin when you can and just keep repeating this melody. What it does is have you walk the grounds of that site and hopefully walk it in silence too, because you are understanding that these musicians need to listen to each other. My hope was that because of the awareness of that, that people would remain very quiet and understand why we are acknowledging this site.
You had mentioned also the volcanoes. The Coro Lux Choir was at the Black Volcano. They start singing and then they wind in a line very slowly up the side, and then they end up at the top looking out over the Rio Grande Valley.
The score says that you get a large choir together, and when you start at the bottom, you should sing your lowest note that you can, and as you get to the top, you're singing the highest note that you can. So incrementally increasing the pitch as you walk. The idea for me, too, is that they should envision themselves as expelling air in the way that the volcano once did. So they are in themselves becoming kind of mini volcanoes as they walk to the top. And that exhaustion might be something that is audible, but it's also something to work through, that their own bodies are perhaps going to struggle as they climb, but at the same time they are attempting to sing these high pitches up to the sky. Community I come from, Diné people, Albuquerque is kind of the easternmost part of what we consider homelands, and the volcanoes also have their very special place to us, a very special significance to us. And surely the petroglyphs on the side of town also are certainly ancestors, I think, that we all might trace ourselves to. And I think even, you know, any artist in this city today should remember that those are the first artists who kind of set a path of us continuing to make art in this city. So I always like to acknowledge them. Those petroglyphs to myself too are very influential. I used to go out there when I was a teenager and sketch those pictographs, and I spent the night out there one time too, and you know, drawing these spirals and these lines. Since then, they've become notations in a lot of my work. Some of these circular forms have become bowing patterns for a cello, for instance. And I think they've certainly influenced an idea of graphic notation for me. They're very mysterious, and we don't know what they mean necessarily, or maybe we're not allowed to know what they mean. And for me, that becomes this open invitation of considering how any kind of drawing can prompt somebody to make sound or to do any kind of action.
The other movement that involved the petroglyphs was Rinconada.
Yeah, that movement is certainly inspired by the ways that the petroglyphs can become this graphic notation and this kind of open prompt for free interpretation. We had the four musicians bring some interesting sound-making devices. We had my sister Autumn Chacon, who was one of the performers, playing harmonica. And we had another performer, Liz Rincon, playing classical guitar. And another artist, Viola LeBeau, playing a drum and a rattle. And then we had a local musician, Ryan Dennison, who was performing with a pair of amplified hair clippers. So basically buzzing this parts of his hair and cutting that off into the wind. You know, instead of focusing on interpreting these petroglyphs as melody or some kind of Western musical prioritized parameter, they would take these notations and use them for any other kind of prompt or instruction that they would use to not only make sound, but to traverse the site of Rinconada Canyon.
This is University Showcase. I'm Megan Kamrick. I'm talking with UNM alum and composer Raven Chacon about his work Tiwe, Dawn to Dusk, a day-long musical composition that took place across Albuquerque on September 27th, 2025. Several of the movements were moving processions. You had one called the Greeters, you mentioned, on horseback. You had walking processions from UNM and from downtown to Old Town. You had lowriders along Central and then on Eubank. And then you even had a flatbed truck with mariachis playing. Why did you want to put the physical movement throughout the city with that sound and the music?
One thing I always put in my music is some kind of spatialization or actual movement. I try to have musicians move across the stage if possible. And very often I don't have musicians even on a stage. They might be spread out around an audience. They might be positioned within an audience. And so given that the audience on that day that we performed Tiwe was asked to move across the city, it seemed appropriate that musicians would also, for some of these movements, be moving as well. I think also to just think of the culture of where we lived, a celebration of cars, of lowriders, but at the same time, it can be a very walkable city. Yeah, with the mariachis too, the piece for them, that was Movement 10 called The Balladeers. Mariachi Lobo here on UNM campus. I asked them to play from their repertoire, but change the song every time they turn the corner. There was a moment, though, in this piece where the lowriders had made it to that neighborhood as well. And right as the movement, I believe Movement 13 for the drummers, was happening at the Nuclear Museum, there was an intersection of all three movements in the parking lot of the Nuclear Museum.
I was there. It was very interesting.
So that was a composed part of this, was to have this, what I've been calling throughout the piece, a crossing of songs. Mm. Having the musical collision of these three different musical communities interact with each other at a certain point in the composition.
The drummers kind of recreating an atomic blast was called the low point. Tell me more about that.
You know, I wanted to write something for that museum and address the history of atomic research and development of the atomic bomb here in our state and Albuquerque's role in that. And so, of course, that was the perfect place to do that. What is happening in that piece is there is a musician who is playing a field recording of Albuquerque on a rainy day. And so that Filled recording was then run through this musician, her name's Tani Udero, who's mm-hmm. also here at mm-hmm. KUNM,
yep.
manipulating that Filled recording and just kind of having this calm sound wash over the audience. And at a certain moment, then you have all of these drummers on a single downbeat, just playing as fast and loud as possible. I named the piece Lowest Point for two reasons. One being that an atomic blast will create this crater, and thinking of the sites of where that explodes would create a low point. But also thinking about the point in human history where we had to make this technology and be put in a position to decide to use it. It's thinking through that. It's thinking through our place as New Mexicans, but also as a nation, but also as humans, where we got to in the 20th century.
Mm. One of the places was, did you call it a glass graveyard? I had no awareness of this place.
It's stunning. It's a bit of a junkyard of glass left over from a bottling or glass company that was located there. Now it's just a huge area of just broken glass. And if you visit it at a certain time of day, you'll see some beautiful shimmering as the sun hits it at sunset, for instance. I didn't have a movement that referenced the future of our city, and I wanted to think about this glass lasting far into the future if they don't clean it up. I had the musicians in this particular movement make these amplified sticks, so getting long sticks with contact mics and stirring this glass to make this shimmering sound. The effect I wanted is that they would appear to be working or digging or trying to find something amongst this glass. Maybe they're salvaging something necessary through these remains of this past glass that will not decompose. And in a way, it becomes its own rock or its own petroglyph. So they are stirring in the shapes of the petroglyphs that are in Rinconada. Also, I didn't mention this before, the path of the mariachis on the truck through the neighborhoods is also found on one of the petroglyphs in Rinconada.
You had mentioned also encouraging people to look up. You joined other musicians on the top of the Gizmo building with a bunch of electric guitarists playing really loud.
There were two movements on rooftops. The one before that was called Dawae. And Dawae is an acknowledgement in Tiwa language of thank you, or we are here. We are honoring that we are able to live on this earth. And so I had different musicians from Laguna Pueblo, some Diné, some Apache, all speaking in their indigenous languages from the rooftops of City Hall and the other bank buildings and the intersection there. And then down the street after that movement was eight guitarists on top of the Gizmo building. I wanted to use the Gizmo building as it's soon to be a site of a lot of artistic activity. This is a building owned by Sherry Kreider, the Sanitary Tortilla Factory. I said, I want to be on your rooftop and make a bunch of noise. And this one just celebrates the musical history of Route 66.
One of the most surprising events for me was the cantata. It was in this amazing space that's under the Interstate 40. You have eight singers. They're scattered throughout, then they move to intersect one another and then move on as they sing. It was an unusual place to hear a concert. How did you find this, and why did you want to use it?
There were two movements where I wanted to collaborate with friends, local composers and musicians that I've collaborated with in the past. The first one of these was a collaboration with A Hawk and a Hacksaw, local musicians Heather Trost and Jeremy Barnes. And they led a procession from the guitar movement over to Old Town through the streets, starting at Robinson Park downtown and ending at the gazebo at Old Town. So I co-composed that work with them. And the second one was a collaboration with Marisa DeMarco. And she and I have been in a group for a long time called the Death Convention Singers. And it's a collective of musicians just to experiment. She had known of this area underneath this bridge where the river intersects with I-40 and shared with me that she always wanted to do something down there. That one was a bit more complicated because we had very kind of immense sound and reinforcement for that one. We had a lot of powered speakers and PA system. And we also had a musician, Ken Cornell, who was amplifying the sounds of the traffic from the bridge as this bed under which eight musicians were singing melodies and words that Marisa had composed. After the cantata under the bridge and the reverse prayer on the mountain peak, the sun had already set and there was an epilogue. And this took place on the stairs of Pat Hurley Park. And I had gone over there and with pieces of paper, notating a pitch that was to be played. And so there were 12 pitches, each of the equal temperament scale, at each of the kind of landings of that staircase. And the prompt was asking 12 different musicians to go and find a location and play the pitch that's indicated. So you had this very dense, dissonant chord that was slowly shifting depending who was standing in which position. The chord was always the same, but it always kind of morphed. That was a movement to get people to look back at the city at nighttime, to look at the city lights, and to just give a final acknowledgement of their home. And it started raining. It was supposed to last much longer. It was such a beautiful sound. I would have loved to have it go for hours, but it started raining on us, and we called it a day.
Raven, you're internationally famous. You've won multiple awards. You travel the world. What brings you back to Albuquerque? Why did you want to honor this place with this work?
All of my music education came from this city. My piano teacher, who was conducting the entire piece over that day, over the airwaves here at KUNM, she taught me to read music when I was 8 or 9 years old, and she basically taught me how to be a musician. As I got older, I was listening to other voices, other sounds here on the station. Just across the way here at the Fine Arts Library, I was up there looking at scores all the time, just looking at music scores and trying to understand how they worked. And played in with a lot of musicians in this town. Anybody that would have me, you know, any style I would sit in with. That same mariachi group we put on the flatbed, I used to be in that group when I was about 21 years old or so. And so it was a way to collaborate with people I'd made music with since I was a teenager, to meet new musicians I'd never met before, to bring UNM students into something that maybe is outside of the conventions of even what they're taught in a music department, and just to have the general public be reminded of all these different sounds that get made in the city and what those might mean and the faces who might be making those sounds as well. I guess a big part of that was just an excuse to come back to Albuquerque and work on something very ambitious.
Would you consider doing something like this again? Or
no. No way.
Or redoing it?
quite a few people asked me, those who just didn't make it down that day, are you going to do it again? I said, I advertised this very well. You should have come. Mm-hmm. But no, I mean, in all seriousness, the idea with the print, with the lithograph, with the score, is that I donated one to MAGIC, to the MAP Center here on campus, and I donated one to the Fine Arts Library, hoping that there's some student who is just like me, looking at scores, nerding out on them, and says, I'm going to do this. And they could do it. They'll be the next one.
How are you working to memorialize it?
I filmed the entire day. I had 6 videographers and filmmakers running around the city, just as I was. And I'm piecing together, hopefully, a feature-length representation of what happened that day. Not so much as documentation, but rather just itself becoming a condensed musical composition of the piece. The hope is that that can be exhibited or screened in a theater, but also I'd love to turn it into some kind of art installation that maybe you go in a different room and see one movement and go to another and see another chapter.
Raven Chacon, thank you for talking with me.
Thank you, Megan.
That was Pulitzer Prize-winning composer and UNM graduate Raven Chacon talking about his work Tiwi, Dawn to Dusk, which took place across Albuquerque on September 27, 2025. You can see photos at KUNM.org. Thanks to the City of Albuquerque for the extra sound I could not capture during the day-long event. I'm Megan Kamrick. Thanks for listening to University Showcase on KUNM.